I'm Jessica Harris. This is From Scratch. My guest is Michael Dubin, co-founder of Dollar Shave Club, a membership club for men's grooming products. For less than $10 a month, customers receive products ranging from razors to hair gel. Michael launched Dollar Shave Club in July 2011, and the company grew to $65 million in revenue in roughly 2 years. Michael graduated from Emory in 2001 and worked in marketing prior to starting Dollar Shave Club. He also did improv comedy at Upright Citizens Brigade in New York City. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I love that little fact. What was your goal in signing up for those classes? Did you think, oh, I want a career in comedy one day, or it was just sort of for brain flexibility?
I had always loved the comedy industry, and, you know, I had wanted to study it. I grew up watching Saturday Night Live, and I wanted to know how those guys did it, and I always had a reasonably good sense of humor, so I thought this sounds like something I'd be interested in training in. Spent a lot of money on those classes, but they paid off because it helped me immeasurably with Dollar Shave Club, so I'm grateful for it.
So you grew up in Philadelphia. Your mom was a teacher, and then she became she worked in real estate as a real estate broker.
That's right.
And your father is an attorney. What kind of law does he practice?
Tax law. I applied to law school, you know, during the confused years of my early to mid-20s. I was working at NBC and NBC News at the time, and then I had a marketing job that didn't pay a whole lot, and I had a father who was like, yeah, you really should be thinking about law school. So I took the LSAT and applied and thankfully didn't get in.
So you found yourself at a party in 2011 and you met Mark Levine, and he was the father of a friend's fiance, and you got to talking about shaving. How did the conversation arise? Do you remember it specifically?
Yeah, I do. So Mark was one of these guys who had done a lot of business in Asia, and he was like we had a family friend growing up who would always show up with like a truck full of soccer balls or like a truck full of bikes, and you know, he'd honk the horn, we'd come down the driveway, and he'd be like, hey, you guys need some bikes or soccer balls? And we'd be like, sure, John, we could use some bikes and soccer balls. And Mark was one of these guys similar to our friend John, where he just was kind of always buying stuff and bringing it somewhere else and selling it. And there were a couple things he had in his warehouse. One was some cake slicers that are shaped like an actual wedge of cake. No more fussing around with, you know, a knife and having to make two motions. One fluid motion,
wow.
Cake slice. And then he also told me that he had 250,000 twin razor blades that he had been unable to sell in the drugstore. And he knew that I had experience with the web, and he said, you know, any interest in helping me with any of this stuff? And so, I had two choices. I had the cake slicers or I had the razors. And, you know, almost instantly I had the idea for Dollar Shave Club, because guys for so long had been, myself included, frustrated with the process of going to the store to buy this stuff. You have to find the locked razor fortress. You got to find the guy or the girl with the key. They're always doing something else. Mm-hmm. And I just thought there was a much better way to do it.
Where was this party, by the way? Was it in New York?
No, it was in Los Angeles. I'd moved to L.A. in 2009.
Why did you, by the way, move to L.A. from New York City?
Oh, well, I came for a girl and for a job. Huh? And I left the girl and I left the job.
You started working out of your apartment selling the razors, and you created a website. Did the customers come?
Yeah. So from 2011 to 2012, we had a beta website where we were testing different, you know, ways of selling the razors. We had bulk and we had subscription, and ultimately, and we had one-off. So I ran that site till early 2012, and we filmed the video, and that's what kind of brought us into the modern era.
You referred to this video. This was a kind of bare bones humor. Thank goodness for Upright Citizens Brigade kind of helping to inspire such comedy. You got help from Lucia Aniello to help you make the video, and she is a writer on Broad City and Time Traveling Bong. How much went into this production of the video?
The making of this video, which has taken on kind of, you know, lore of its own, is a major reason for our success. And I have a few things to thank. You know, one is my time at the Upright Citizens Brigade, where I learned how to really write strong comedy sketch. And our video is essentially a sketch, although it's an advertisement. The other thing I have to thank is that, you know, my experience there led me to a friendship with Lucia. And Lucia had just moved to L.A. To change her career. And, you know, I said to her, listen, I'm starting a company. I need your help filming this video, which I want to put on our homepage. She said, great. We picked a day. I had $4,500. That's all I had. We shot it in one day in our original fulfillment center, which is in Gardena, California, just south of the airport. We went for it, and you know, it turned out okay. And we sat on that for a few months before we launched it.
And so from that video, all of a sudden you wake up and there are 12,000 orders. Were you surprised?
I was totally shocked. I mean, this is one of these moments as a founder at a company that you kind of dream will happen, but never actually think will happen. You plan for months and months. You invest your life savings into something. You think you have a good idea. Everybody tells you you don't. And then you launch this video, and within a matter of 2 hours, your site has crashed because of traffic. That, to me, was terrifying, because in one moment, I thought my wildest dreams had turned into my worst nightmares. And we're very fortunate that we recovered from that moment, and that people stuck around and tried again to come to the site, and that, you know, we endured a few days worth of press around it to keep people coming back.
Who did you show the video to prior to launching it? Like, what did your parents think of it, or Mark, or?
Yeah, I showed it to a few friends who really liked it. I remember I was skiing with my family the weekend before we launched the video, and I showed it to them, and they looked at it and they were like, "Yeah, it's not bad."
Tax attorney.
Yeah. No, my dad has a great sense of humor. So does my mom. So does my sister. We're all funny people. But, you know, for some reason, this video, I mean, I got maybe a snort or two.
Mm-hmm.
Not encouraging for somebody who just spent the last year and change working on this project and was about to kind of go big.
Yeah. How did you launch it? Do you just, like, put it up there and hope that people come? Or was there something behind getting the viewers?
So we had raised $1 million in seed capital from investors, and we strategically timed the announcement of the funding with the relaunch of the website with the launch of the video. Mm-hmm. And we did that at a time of year when people are waiting for a technology story, which is to say right before South by Southwest. There's a little bit of a quiet period before eyes are on Austin. I think the festival started on the 7th or the 8th, and we launched this on the 6th, and all the media that covered the launch used the video to tell the story. So it went from the tech press to the mainstream press.
Hmm. Before you raised $1 million, you had raised like $100,000 from one investor in Los Angeles. Who was that?
Yeah, the group is called Science. They're an investor based in Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. And when they wrote out the check, they wrote me a $100 check by accident instead of a $100,000 check, which for anybody that knows the folks over at Science, that has special meaning and humor.
And then you went on to raise capital from Andreessen Horowitz and Forerunner and Kleiner Perkins and Venrock. Talk to me about your first couple customers. Do you remember who they were?
Yes. I remember that in the early version, I'll never forget my first customer's name. His name was Imran Charnania from Houston, Texas. I don't know what happened to him. I should look up and see if he's still a member. But good old Imran Charnania was the first customer of Dollar Shave Club. I mean, that validation is gold. There's no amount of money that's going to make you feel as good as somebody else with a real brain and a real pocketbook saying yes to your idea. I mean, that feeling is irreplaceable.
I want to talk about the second video that you launched, which was video number 2, in which One Wipe Charlie's feature prominently, which is just basically, you know, wipes for men's butts. Did you get that idea because so many people were asking for number 2, or what was the chicken and the egg there?
Well, yes, thank you for the very polite way of saying wipes for men's butts.
Mm-hmm.
Men are using wipes, and they're just not talking about it. And that's not just men with kids. I was using wipes back in college because a friend turned me on to it, and it was a much more pleasant, comfortable way to solve the problem. if Dollar Shave Club is successful at anything, it's speaking with a relatable voice to our members and getting them to change their behavior around their grooming. And, you know, we sell thousands of these things a day.
Yeah.
I have people that come up to me in airports and tell me how it's changed their life. I had a guy stop his conference call in an airport, open his backpack, and show me that he was carrying our travel wipes. And I had a guy in a hot tub come up to me, swim up to me in Hawaii and say, "Sorry to bother you. I just have to tell you, I'm a huge fan of these One Wipe Charlies. My girlfriend actually made me buy them because she says I wasn't doing a good enough job."
Wow. Okay.
And so, you know, I feel like, you know, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I know what doctors kind of go through when a doctor tells somebody that they're a doctor. They get all kinds of like unsolicited information. That's kind of what happens to me now.
So men's grooming, it seems like there's that men are taking more ownership over their aesthetic life. Why do you think that is?
Well, without trying to sound too pitchy, mm-hmm. I will tell you that, you know, it's our belief that men are sort of evolving emotionally and physically as it relates to this category. You know, the United States is behind Asia and Europe in sort of the sophisticated nature of men's grooming. There have been guys that, you know, are kind of your standard, you know, Pert Plus Irish Spring guys, not just to pick on two kind of legacy brands. You know, they just kind of grab whatever's there. To them, soap is soap. And then there's a lot of guys who are very proud to say, yeah, you know what, I'm thinking very critically about the ingredients that go into my daily face moisturizer with SPF. So you got to get guys all over the map.
My son, who's 5, the other day started using gel in his hair. So we bought him like Dippity Doo. And it was striking to me that he doesn't have any cultural influence, but that was just an innate interest in making sure his hair looked good.
Yeah.
Do you use gel in your hair?
I don't use gel. I use our cream, our hair cream.
I'm Jessica Harris. You're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Michael Dubin, co-founder of Dollar Shave Club, an e-commerce mail order company for men's grooming products. The company started off by selling razors for a few dollars per month in 2011 and now offers products ranging from hair cream to body cleanser. I noticed that a lot of companies that have launched lately also have a similar tongue-in-cheek humor. I'm not sure that's the best description, but I think of like Sir Kensington's ketchup, right? Or even Oscar Health or your company. They all have like this pared-down humor to them that really resembles each other. Do you get that sense that like in our culture there's some type of, there's an appreciation for a certain type of humor that, you know, 50 years ago if you were launching, it wouldn't have resonated as much?
Yeah, I think we as a culture are much more comfortable with humor and pushing the boundaries of humor. We also recognize the importance of speaking, you know, like a peer to customers, you know, and not kind of down to customers. And so companies have gotten much more familiar in their language and their approach. You know, razors at this point are essentially a commodity. I think about what Dollar Shave Club is doing very much like what Starbucks did for coffee. So remember what there was before coffee. Mm-hmm. Before coffee, there was darkness, just a black hole in the universe. But before Starbucks, you know, what were you drinking? Folgers, Maxwell House. It was, you know, relatively unexciting and functional. And then, you know, Howard Schultz came along and said, wait a second, this is a moment in your life that is to be celebrated. It's a ritual, and it's something that's that deserves a culture. It's all its own. You know, Dollar Shave Club is doing the same thing with the razor commodity and with its men's grooming products. We're saying that this is a really important part of your life that needs to be celebrated and deserves a culture all its own. So when people ask us, are you a razor company? Are you a men's grooming company? I say, actually, no, we're an experience company. And it starts the moment you see an advertisement, and it continues every month that you get a shipment from us.
What has been harder for you than you thought in all of this?
You know, scaling a company to 200 employees is a very big challenge. It's very easy for you when you're a small company and there's 6 people in a room or 25 people in a room. But when you scale to 175, 200 people, and there are many layers to the organization, your bad habits, you know, you don't get away with your bad habits as well. And you really have to put in process. And this is not a journey that's unique to Dollar Shave Club. Anybody that's gone from 0 to 200 or beyond has been through this. And that was harder than I expected.
What do your parents make of all this, the teacher and the tax attorney?
At first, they didn't really believe what was happening because they saw the video. They didn't think it was very funny, and they were kind of taken aback and blindsided by the sudden spotlight on their son. Slowly, they kind of got used to the fact that we were doing something disruptive and something that was worth kind of looking at. And you know, now they're thrilled. I mean, they're super proud.
How would your parents describe you?
Well, so when I was a kid, they gave me this nickname called the Blitherer because I would sort of blither on, and I think they meant blither lovingly. I don't even know if blither is a real word, is it? You know, people might describe me as a blitherer now, too.
Well, that's ironic because in the videos that I've seen, there's real economy to your writing.
I think that's what good writing is all about. You know, someone once said, maybe it was Mark Twain, I wrote you a long letter because I didn't have time to write a short one.
Can you tell me just briefly about your own grooming regimen?
Why, yes. My own grooming regimen begins in the morning when I get into the shower and I'll wash my hair and then I'll wash my body. Then I'll get out of the shower. And if it's one particular day, I'll shave. After I'm done shaving, I'll put on a daily face moisturizer with SPF. And when I'm done, maybe I'll sit down on the toilet and use some One Wipe Charlies. And, you know, sometimes I'll snip my eyebrows if I have to. Mm-hmm. I once saw this barber do something really cool, like cut my ear hair with a string, like a knitting string. Have you seen this?
Oh, yes. Women do it for their brows.
Oh, my God. It's an amazing trick.
Yes.
I mean, there must be a web video I can watch on how to do that.
What might I not know about you?
I make really good homemade popcorn.
Why is it?
Why is it so good?
Yeah, what makes it?
Well, I don't make microwave
popcorn. It's a commodity.
It is a commodity because I build an experience around it. it's my way of saying don't make microwave popcorn.
What else?
Let's see. When I first moved to California, I had an apartment that was near the beach, and I would see all these sailboats go by, and I'd never learned how to sail a boat. So I took a couple classes, and now I'm a licensed sailor.
Has there been, one or two people who have been kind of unlikely allies for you that have really helped to transform, like, accelerate the trajectory of things?
What's really rewarding and fun is when you meet reputable, sort of even famous people that are members of Dollar Shave Club. And you're like, whoa, that's really interesting. Like, you know, this person's a member. Mm-hmm. And they're like going out of their way to tell me how much they love the club. And that's like really cool. I had this idea in my apartment.
For example.
I don't know if it's breaching privacy. Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if I'm allowed to do that. I'll tell you what's the reverse. It was a super bummery. Is like, you know, with 3.1 million members, like members of ours have definitely died, and that's like something that I just actually was thinking about the other day.
Yep. Like, how do you end the accounts? Well, they stop paying, and then you find out that they've died.
Usually, someone will reach out and say, you know, I mean, this is a pretty morose topic, but, you know, it is something to think about. Like, somebody that saw a commercial, signed up, enjoyed the club for a time, has now moved on to the great club in the sky, or the great kind of underground club. There's different clubs that you go to after. Look, death is, for all the listeners out there, it awaits us all.
Well, you could turn it into an experience.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Michael Dubin, co-founder of Dollar Shave Club. If you would like to learn more about the show, please visit our website at fromscratchradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at Jess G. Harris or find us on Facebook. I'm Jessica Harris. This is From Scratch.